Hello, Internet. It's Tori. You're listening to the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. For updates on when episodes go live, follow us on Twitter and Facebook. To join the discussion, visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/CosmereCast, where you'll find an invitation to our Discord server. Thank you for listening, and please, enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. I'm your host, Mike. Joining me this week are Dave.
Yo.
And Tori.
Hello, Internet.
And we start every week with good thing. So, Dave, one thing that's good.
I wanted Craig to be here for something. So my good thing this week instead will be Yogi Berra quotes. Let me look up a few for us. So Yogi Berra was a baseball player. He played for the Yankees. And baseball is 90% mental. The other half is physical. It ain't over till it's over. The future ain't what it used to be. When you come to a fork in the road, take it. You should always go to other people's funerals. Otherwise, they won't come to yours. Oh, man. And one of my favorites, nobody goes there anymore. It's too crowded. Yogi Berra. What a guy.
All right.
Guys, any Yogi Berra quotes to add, guys?
Hey, boo-boo.
No, but I really feel that last one. Nobody goes there anymore. It's too crowded. There is a restaurant right across the street from my library that is supposed to be this amazing restaurant and has apparently been featured in magazines. It's like a little cafe, you know, old-fashioned diner, dive, whatever. And you can't get in. Like, nobody I know has eaten there, because every time you try to go there, all the tables are full. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I was just gonna pretend like I thought that Yogi Berra and Yogi Bear were the same person, and I was gonna do a Hey Boo Boo picnic baskets, yada yada yada. But the time for
Yogi
that has passed.
Bear. That's not a person. He's a bear. He might have been named after Yogi Berra. I don't know.
He very explicitly was, yeah.
Okay.
All right, so I guess it's my good thing?
Yeah.
All right. So my good thing this week is not the wrestler Sting. It's also not the musician Sting. It's the fact that the wrestler Sting owns the rights to the name Sting for entertainment purposes and leases it to the singer Sting for $1 a year.
That's hilarious. That is a good thing.
I am endlessly entertained by this little tidbit every time I remember it. It makes me laugh every time. So do either of you have either a favorite Sting moment or a favorite Sting moment?
Yeah.
Are you going to tell us what it is?
Yeah. It's that time Sting was on The Simpsons and he was helping dig Bart out of the well. And they were like, oh, thanks for helping us dig Bart out of the well, Sting. And he's like, I'll always be there when one of my fans needs me. And Marge says, I never heard Bart play any of your albums. And then Homer says, quiet, Marge, he's a good digger.
So I love the music that he helped with on Emperor's New Groove.
That almost entirely didn't get used? Yeah. Yeah, that movie took a hard turn from like concept to actual execution.
Isn't that something you know a lot about, Mike?
What's that?
You know a lot about that movie, I think.
I love that movie. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I was thinking.
But yeah, like the music for it was like written in part by Sting, and had like a completely different tone from what it ended up as, which was Disney making a Looney Tune. But they kept the best song for the credits, even though it had nothing to do with the movie at that point. Because, you know, you pay Sting for a song, you use that song, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But my favorite Sting moment is the at least three times now that they've done a faked Sting gimmick, and then there ends up being real Sting wearing a fake Sting mask, where he lifts up the fake Sting mask, and it's real Sting with the real Sting face paint on. And then he usually hits somebody with a chair or a bat or something.
Oh.
But, what? Yeah, that has happened at least three separate times in professional wrestling.
So, the wrestler Sting wears a mask that looks like the musician Sting?
No. So they introduce someone else wearing Sting's face paint. It's not Sting. It's fake Sting. And then, at some point later, after fake Sting has been established, real Sting wears, like, a plastic mask of fake Sting, but then lifts it up to reveal that it's really real Sting, and then hits somebody with a chair. Or a bat.
Give me the bat.
But yeah. So, Tori, what's your good Sting this week?
So, I'm officially using this as my good thing, even though it happened a while ago. I got promoted. Yay!
Yay, congrats. So,
now I am no longer a children's librarian. I am a library manager. My powers have grown 9,000.
Ooh.
Congrats. Do you wanna tell us about that, or just the fact that you got a promotion and then we're done?
Yeah, Yeah, that's my good thing. Okay. I'm still getting used to all of it. I've got a great staff. They all seem pretty...
It does 2d6 damage.
Yeah, no, they all seem pretty fabulous. I'm just getting to know them. I'm having to learn how to do things like scheduling and timesheets and approving vacation requests, you know, stuff I've never had to do before in my library
and
career.
Disapproving vacation requests.
That hasn't come up yet. But yeah, go me. I'm in charge now.
Yay, Tori's the boss.
Charge.
So she'll be hosting the episode from now on.
No, not like that.
And writing the bullet points and making all the witty comments.
Nope. See, it's my job to delegate those things.
And wrangling Craig. You're the official Craig wrangler.
Yeah, I will accept that.
Yeah, so let's do some chapters this week. You guys want to do some chapters? I feel like doing some chapters.
Yeah.
It depends which ones.
Any.
What do you have in mind?
Just pick any? Six random chapters from any book.
I'm into random book. Random House Publishing. Never mind. Let's just do Oathbringer. Chapter 70 through 75, or whatever it says on my stream. Chapter 70. Hi, Marshall, as you are. Dreamy Kaladin finally realizes that Light Eyes are people. Dreamy Kaladin stews for a while and waits for the High Marshal. High Marshal, as your secret. Noro wants to show something to Dreamy Kaladin. Dreamy Kaladin goes back to the party ball. So if you remember from last week's chapters, Dreamy Kaladin left the party, and then someone was like, hey, you a deserter? You want to undesert to the wall guard? And he goes and eats some stew, and here we pick up. And he meets the High Marshal of the wall guard, a woman named Azure. And Kaladin's like, what's the big deal? So I guess there's radiant women, whatever. And they're like, everyone's all uncomfortable because of war and culture and stuff and, you know, gender roles. And then he goes to the top of the wall and they're like, check it out. There's the Voidbringers. Want to join up? And he's like, I have to go ask King Elokar first. So he leaves and goes back to the party. And that's chapter 70. All right, Craig, what did I mean by those bullet points?
Who's Craig in this scenario?
Whoever has the Coppermind wiki open. But I think I've outcovered it anyway.
So, yeah, I find it interesting here that Kaladin somehow never really interacted with,
who?
Like...
What did
sorry, he? Dreamy Kaladin somehow never really interacted with... like lower tier Light Eyes.
Oh yeah, these are all basically all of them are 10th Dawn, right?
Yeah, these are all known as Tenors, which make up like the bulk of the Light Eyed population, as you might expect.
Yeah, and they refer to the 4th and 5th Dawn as middies or something.
Something like that. Like anybody who doesn't have like a high status basically is, but isn't a 10th Dawn is, yeah.
So I was trying to think, what Don is Adolin second, because he's the son of a high prince?
He would be either second or third. I think third because he isn't a high prince, or no.
First is like King Elokar and the high princes, I thought.
It changed because, I think it changed in Alethkar because they didn't have a king before. But I don't remember. So yeah. Either Elokar and Aes Sedain are the only first Dawn Light Eyes, or Elokar and Aes Sedain and all the High Princes are first Dawn.
Can I jump in?
No.
So, Adelaide.
How do you like my Craig impression? It's pretty spot on, huh?
Oh my gosh, you must have been practicing.
Yeah. I was even practiced enough that I can talk as Craig and myself at the same time through my voice. This That's isn't dubbed. This is no audio secret. I'm this good.
So, hi, everyone. I have rejoined. I'm here in the episode. Adolin is the heir of a high prince, so therefore he is second Dan.
Oh, who's Dan?
Oh, that's your brother. You should know that.
Dawn. Like Dawn Shard.
Thinking Dawn.
So first Dan is Dave's brother. Second Dan is LaRusso, the Karate Kid. Third Dan,
Danny DeVito,
I think is like a martial arts like level.
Yeah, it's Danny DeVito is a martial artist. Sure. So
I would not be surprised to learn that that's true.
Remember that time my good thing was I saw someone who looked kind of like Danny DeVito? That was like the best good thing.
That was a pretty good thing. I still think crunchy leaves is pretty good.
Yeah, that's a good thing. Squishy grass.
Yeah.
So first Don is the king, and second, like I said, is high prince and high prince heirs.
Oh. What about Isudan? Is she first Don or second Don? Third Don. Yeah, she doesn't fit any of those two.
It's not maybe the queen isn't listed in here, but I assume she's the same Don as the king, right? Because
Don King.
That's like the seventh Don. Like, don't even worry about that. But yeah, then Renarin would be third Don?
Yes, because he is not inheriting.
Okay, so he's the son of a high prince, but not the crown prince or whatever.
Right.
Not the heir. Yeah.
And that actually includes Elokar's children. If he has any non-heirs, they would also be third Don.
I see.
Would that change once Dalinar dies? Like, would Renarin lose Don at that point because he's no longer the son of the High Prince? He's just some Light Eyes at this point?
Wouldn't that make him second because he would become the High Prince?
No.
Well, no, it says generals, high lords, and non-inheriting children of first and second Don Light Eyes. That's what a third Don is. I assume it would stay the same because, like, for example, Kaladin and his family, like, they had a certain ranking, and it's not like it changed very often over time. So I think he's just third Don, like, since his birth. And since as long as he doesn't inherit at the time of Dalinar's death, then he just stays third Don.
It's a similar system, but
dramatic fella.
It's a similar system, but the Dark Eyes do work differently. Like they can basically earn a higher ranking, and that will pass on to their children in a way that like Light Eyed stuff doesn't. Like that's explicitly tied to your current title. But none of that matters now because Dreamy Kaladin has been, what was he, third Non, and then below 10th Non because he was a slave, and now he's like a. Actually, since he's the head of Dalinar's bodyguards and or Knights Radiant, wouldn't he be like third Don at this point?
It depends on if he's considered a general. If his ranking is general, he's third Don. If he has land, so he might be just sixth Don because that's a captain lord, and he also has land. So
I mean, that's like
he might just be granted sixth Don.
That's minimum for a shard bearer, but. Dreamy Kaladin also has like a lot of additional duties. Like I think he's definitely being treated as a general as of like this book, actually.
Hey, good news. There's a list of people in different rankings, and the Queen, Isudan, is second Don, not first Don.
Well, so she's a high prince.
That's
the Queen. So only the king is first Don. Like that's essentially what it is. Only the king.
That's pretty sexist.
Well, okay, if the king was a queen, it would be also the queen. Like, for example, Queen Fen is listed here as equivalent to first Don. So it's not sexist, it's just single.
That's royalist.
And it looks like Kaladin is fourth Don because of his shard blade and being, you know, the head of the running the Knight Radiant for Dalinar sort of thing. He is fourth Don.
The plural of Knight Radiant is Knights Radiant. The past tense of Knight Radiant is Knighted Radiant.
All right, so next chapter?
Chapter 71, A Sign of Humanity. 11 years ago, Evie Mobile, Tanalan the Young. Somebody will kill Dalinar someday. Dalinar tries that dueling trick the Philistines did. Was this rebellion all just a ploy? I'm confused. The real traitor was Sibariel. Nah, just kidding. It was Sadeas. That's chapter 71 for you.
No, I refuse to believe Sadeas is a traitor.
But he is a jerkwad. Confirmed.
But from what we've already seen of him back in the first two books, he's so reliable and steadfast and just a really true friend.
You can rely on him to stab you in the back.
He definitely sticks to his morals. I cannot fault Sadeas for sticking to his morals.
It would never be Sibariel. Being a traitor sounds like too much work.
Oh.
Now, Sibariel will be a traitor instead of a traitor.
That's where I got confused. And I also know that he likes to capitalize on opportunities, but I might have misunderstood that as well.
So one of your bullet points, I agree with 1,000,000,000%, which is, I'm confused. I've brought this up in the past to Craig and Tori. This and this chapter, and then the later one that, like, basically ties it all together, that is in this week's set of chapters, confuses me. And I would like would like an adult to explain to me what happened, please.
It's like, I'm not counting out the possibility, we're jumping a little ahead, but I'm not counting out the possibility that Sadeas actually was the traitor all along. But I mean, Tanalan does do a thing in the future chapter. We'll get there. We can
discuss it afterwards.
That's what I just said mumblingly.
Okay. I was translating for our viewers, listeners.
Oh, yeah. Craig said it was a bullet point.
Oh, you want me to sum up the bullet points? Okay. So we got a flashback chapter with Dalinar marching towards the rift. Him and Sadeas have split up their troops, where Sadeas is arriving from a different direction. So it's just Dalinar's troops. So he is not aware of what's happening. He has a talk with Eevee. Evie? What are we calling her? How do we pronounce her name?
Eevee's a Pokemon.
Tori?
I think it's Eevee. She's from Cell.
It's Evie.
Evie? All right.
Took my Evie to the levee, but the levee was dry.
So basically, she asked Dalinar to, like, avoid bloodshed at least this day, because she doesn't like when he's, like, a bloodthirsty monster in battle. So he decides to try diplomacy. That is what he decides to do. So he actually goes up alone and has a little chat with Tanalan and one of his, like, retainer dudes, and basically just tries to convince him to surrender. And he's like, you can't do that. You know, you killed my father, stole my shard blade. How could you, sort of thing. And then it's like, look, this is just going to happen. Like, just, we can fight and we can see who's the better person, or we can just agree and you can keep your high prince status, sort of thing. So then Tanalan's like, you know, I can't really do that, but I could say, wink, wink, there was a caravan heading away and they were just here, and what was it, like, that they were
delivering supplies,
right? Okay.
To the traders,
and they head off to the east or whatever direction, and then he tried to ask, like, which of the Alethi kingdoms, like, which of the princes was helping you, and then he said Sadeas, of course, because it is Sadeas.
It's the obvious choice, but not at this point in time from Dalinar's perspective.
It's the obvious choice for us as readers of the book. Like, yes, of course. But at the time, it doesn't seem like that, because Sadeas is, you know, good friends with Gavilar. Like, he's all on Team Gavilar. So.
Hey, I like playing a green-white deck as much as the next guy. And, you know, it's not like he's playing mono-blue. Right.
So they form a truce, and Dalinar stations some of his troops in Rift, and he goes off with some of his elites to go take a look at the caravan and see what's for.
But no officers. He's very clear on this.
No officers go in Rift. He keeps them out.
Only the extremely expendable common people.
Sounds like he's on Sadeas' team after all.
That's it.
Chapter 72. Rockfall.
Nip, nip, nip. You mispronounced that.
Oh, I'm sorry, Numuhukumakiaki Ayalunamorfall.
There you go.
No, you ruined my first bullet point. I'll let you read it.
Oh, I get it. Numuhukumakiaki Ayalunamorfall.
Nailed it. I keep getting confused because Shallan's name keeps changing during the narrative.
Yeah, look forward to continued confusion.
It's like sometimes she goes from Vale to Shallan back to Vale in consecutive sentences, and I'm like, this goes, your brain's confusing. Then it gets hit with a crossbow bolt.
That's 100% intentional, and you should keep track of
it. It's intentional. I know I'm supposed to be confused, but I'm just pointing out the fact that I'm confused. I guess the point is that Shallan is confused about her own identity, right?
No, Vale's entirely set on who Shallan is, Radiant.
And sometimes she likes to pretend she's like Yasna. And then in this chapter, she also takes on the persona of this this light-eyed, crabby lady whom they're stealing food from. And her name is Nananananap, apparently. That's what I wrote down. Shallan Nananananap gets shot in the brain. Food urchin kid Grund. Mythica. This ought to get to the attention of the Cult of Moments. The end of chapter 72.
So Shallan keeps having like horror movie scenes in her chapters. What's up with that?
She talks fine. Everyone played that to be how she communicate.
So what you're saying is Shallan would be the perfect person to cast in a horror movie because she can take a hit. And then she like pops up at the last like finale, like, wait, you're still alive?
No, I'm saying like, that like she keeps having horror movie scenes in her chapters. Like, remember halfway through Way of Kings when she gets chased down the like hallways and rooms and stuff in the big library place? And
this was more of a heist, though. This is a heist movie.
Until she turns into like a face melting half spren. the well, death scene for the T-1000.
I think that was a Scrubs reference.
Yeah, I think in this case she's doing the horroring.
Well, she started to, and then she got shot in the brain, and then it all went melty.
I mean, what else would happen to you if you got shot in the brain? It's pretty legit.
Probably wouldn't be able to maintain an illusion. Maybe a delusion.
Dave, I'm really proud of you for saying illusion a bunch of times and not following it every single time with Michael.
What do you have to do with illusions?
Arrested Development.
Yeah, okay. Illusions, Michael. Oh, I'm sorry. I gotta get my Will Arnett voice. Illusions, Michael.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, that wasn't bad. I don't have anything else for this chapter. It's pretty straightforward. It's a heist. They steal some food. And then Shallan turns it into a horror movie. And then they leave.
Because they nearly got caught.
They kind of did get caught.
They got caught, and then she used intimidation successfully.
Oh, I did enjoy the idea of being able to see like anger spren dripping from the ceiling of the room above.
That was cool.
To let them know that the jig was up.
I really do sort of want to see what spren look like. Like, I try to picture it when I read anything Stormlight Archives, and thankfully Sanderson reminds you of spren often, but it can still be hard to really picturing spren popping up all the time.
That's why we need the movie with the anime spren.
We definitely need anime.
There needs to be like an entire art department whose job is just put a bunch of spren into every scene. Just they're always there in the background everywhere.
It's your job as spren. Have fun. Go nuts.
I'm picturing Pokemon.
Wait. We need a department for Kremling as well. So Kremling
is Detective Pikachu.
Actually,
like,
now
Detective
that I'm...
Pikachu had a lot of like random Pokemon in the background and stuff.
They probably had a department to add random Pokemon to the like
Mike's turn.
That's a Pokemon. Like you could draw from this set. Have fun.
That's right.
Actually, I'm thinking Inside Out did a really good job of that with like every once in a while just cutting to someone's brain team.
Yeah. Yeah. I like those scenes, those different scenes, yeah.
Because, I mean, those five pretty well cover, like, most of the spren that you'd see day to day, right?
Guys, my wife found a really bad Disney trivia, like, just on her phone, and she's reading to us. Their question for Inside Out was, name the four main emotions in people's brains. Four, guys. Guess which one they left out.
The purple guy.
It was the purple guy. Fear.
The purple fear. But he's still a major emotion. How do you forget about him?
I mean, there's arguably two main ones and three supporting ones.
Riley's head, but
yeah, it's true.
Well, you can forget about them really easily when the memory team sends up the gum jingle.
The jingle, yep.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like the plot of that movie is specifically how Greenspren and Bluespren kind of learn to work together. Gosh, I caught them Spren, didn't I?
Spren and Yellow Spren. Yes.
Amy Poehler Spren and glasses wearing Spren that's not Tina Fey.
I mean, it's basically accurate. We don't need to correct it.
Oh, man. I just called Sadness glasses wearing Spren that's not Tina Fey. I think that's an episode, guys. Let's wrap it up. We'll finish these chapters next week. Chapter 73.
Yeah, go ahead with 73. I'm typing up your quote.
Telling which stories? WHICH, in case you were wondering. Dreamy Kaladin is just one of the guys. Adolin is silly. Yes, I am Light Eyes Human, too. How about we do Light Eyes Human things, fellow Light Eyes Human? Beard is funny. Guard the snack delivery truck. These Painspren don't seem human. Half an hour for a drink and a nap. Azure's blade does not have a gemstone. There's a wall fight, but then nothing happens and Kaladin can't even surgerize. Due time, GG.
I'm sorry, but your half an hour joke is gonna die in the edit. I don't know of a way to make it not die. I'm sorry. Maybe I could add time in after? Never mind. A half hour joke is back on the menu. Is anyone else here?
Yes, I'm here. I'm pulling up a link for Dave's
quote. I'm just letting you talk so there's less to cut out when you're editing.
No, the silent stuff gets cut out automatically. So you just have to make random noises.
Hey, Dave, look at Krem posts and on our Discord.
All right, let's see here. Discord.
Did you pull that off of Reddit?
Yes, of course I did. I'm pretty sure I saw it there first.
Because that's incredible. That's so good.
I love this one.
So it's the Steve Buscemi music band, How Do You Do Fellow Kids? But it's How Do You Do Fellow Light Eyes? And someone went and changed his eyes to like a really bright white.
Yep.
So yeah, what happened in this chapter, Craig?
We didn't finish his notes.
No, we did.
Oh, beard is funny. Look at that. There's more. Salute. Did we actually go through all that? Did I just like ignore all of this?
Yeah,
remember?
You sure did.
Stew time. GG.
All right.
Yep. You tuned out or something.
I had to look that up. It was important. Okay. So Kaladin is patrolling with his fellow Light Eyes in Lieutenant Noro's squad, who he met when he first met the Wall Guard. And he's just chatting, getting to know them. Beard, of course, is very talkative and will tell him everything and anything.
And more.
And he has stories for everything.
And more.
And more. So they're meeting up with one of the, I guess, Light Eyes that are distributing food that we've heard from, I believe, Shallan's perspective, Velilant. They're meeting up with him to give him food, and they're late, and there are refugees around that are starting to get a little pushy, and it's sort of like, I think Syl asked Kaladin at one point, like, what would you do if they actually start attacking? So it's a difficult choice, because he has to, you know, protect everybody, but what do? So Kaladin's trying to find out exactly where they get the food, and they think that they have a Soulcaster. Azure has a Soulcaster, I should say. That they captured one from, like, some monastery or something? I don't know.
I think it's a front, because Azure's, whatchamacallit, Dient, and she's like, oh, this Soulcaster is how I'm making food. Because if she were really using the Soulcaster, then the Voidbringers would be all up on him all the time, right?
Yep. Can't fool you.
Yep. We've never heard of blocking investiture ever in any of the books.
Definitely not Coppermind Wiki. Copper Cloud Wiki.
Definitely not Error 2 of Mistborn.
Or Error 1.
Sure.
Definitely anyway. Not sell. Oh, wasn't there a bird on Bird Planet that blocked investiture?
Yeah, the main birds.
Yeah, maybe they have a main bird.
Are you saying they're part aluminum?
No, they're
I'm saying
copper cloudy.
Wait, it's probably in Kolinar.
That is true. We also have copper clouds. Anyway, so they're patrolling the wall. And
what other books are there?
Apparently,
Edgley. They block Edgley. Break. What's that guy's name? The Nightblood book.
No, it's,
I'm trying to think.
It's not War Blocker. It's War Breaker. That's where you're running into some issues.
The sequel is War Blocker. That's or Night Blocker. But you can block dice because they jump over other pieces.
I mean, you don't have to block it because they already broke it.
Oh, but the army is made out of blockhead statues, statue blocks. Yeah, it's all coming together.
All right, let's continue with this chapter. So, apparently, Beer tells them that they hear whispers to join the palace guard when they go near it, but they just don't listen, so they don't get sucked in. So that's weird. And then there's a strike against the wall, and Kaladin starts like getting in captain mode, which is pretty funny because he's not a captain here; he's just a soldier, and he's just starting to give orders. And Nora's like, "It's fine, you know what you're doing," but he let him off easy.
So
it's just a quick strike.
Kaladin realized what he was doing right after he started, and he kept having like urges to keep being in charge that he like stopped himself from doing. So all Noro saw was, oh, the alarm went off, someone was paying attention, and got everybody going. Thanks, bud, appreciate it. Where like Kaladin's internal is like giving orders to everybody and, you know, directing where everybody's gonna go, like it's yeah. So Kaladin's apologizing for stuff he was thinking rather than doing.
Yeah.
Next up,
stew time.
It's time to eat.
Craig,
is that what you wanted me to say? They go off to eat. It's break time.
Craig,
chapter 74.
Hold up, time out. Craig keeps echoing us. Okay, chapter 74.
Swift Spren. Vale is still alive somehow. What's an ideal? That means Shallan spoke truth once. Shallan talks to the culty dudes. Go home and be a family man. Shallan, you're not Yasna. Stop comparing yourself. They sing without juicers. They sing without blenders. They sing without flungers, cab dabblers, and smendlers. Next scene. Vale wants to flirt with dreamy Kaladin. This dude puts money in his drink. Shallan draws a king. BYOF. Take it, Craig.
Well, I'll be honest, I can't. Most of these are really hard to do. So this is a Vale chapter. She's going off being like Robin.
See, it wasn't that hard. She's alive.
She is alive, yes.
I could have sworn she was dead. We saw her get shot in the head and everything.
And she started talking funny and everything.
The rumors of her demise were greatly exaggerated.
Oh, is that Yasna. Why she's not like Yasna? Is because she didn't die?
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
She's
giving food away to some of the beggars and everything, and she is getting a reputation as someone called Swift Spren. Robbing the rich. Swift Spren. What?
Stiffle Biffle again.
Stiffle Biffle?
Okay. Carry on.
It's a Robin Hood. And then she also has Ishna and Vata. Fatha?
Fatha?
Fatha? Wearing illusions of Vale to so that way, you know, it's like she gets around. She's this mystical figure now. So that's cool. But you know, the goal is to get the Cult of Moments to notice her and perhaps even get her to join them. So she like actually joins a procession of the Cult of Moments. So that way she can look actually I think she looks like someone else, right? She makes an illusion of herself to join the procession.
Mm.
And then like she gets caught chanting and is like noticed by someone speaking into her mind saying Shallan, I'm not your enemy. So where are your notes? Shallan talks to the city dude, is that what that is?
Culty dude.
Oh, so it's fuzzy, I'm sorry. Culty dudes, that makes more sense. What the heck is go home and be a family man? What does that mean?
She turns into a Spren. She turns into a Spren and she tells him to stop selling death sticks.
Yeah, she tells him to go home and be a family man.
Oh.
Yet another horror movie scene.
So then she's comparing herself.
It was a horror movie.
she compares herself to Yasna again. In this case, she wants to be a hero too much rather than being logical like Yasna would be. And then, of course, she finds Wit again because she hears people and laughter, and she heads towards it. And there's Wit just singing along.
If there's laughter in pitchforks, Wit can't be far.
Is that what they sing without juicers? They sing without blenders? Is that what that
yeah,
is?
Yeah, they're singing.
So Vale is thinking about... So it's interesting because she's having that struggle where Shallan... Is it Shallan or is it Vale? Vale wants to flirt with Dreamy Kaladin. Can you blame her? Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's sort of like she can't give up the Vale identity just yet. The dude put money in his drink.
Yeah, the king puts money in his drink. That's weird. Like, do you just, like, do you go to the bar and order a glass of wine and stick quarters in it? That's weird and gross. Why does he do that?
So Shallan, while he's, you know, sitting, having a drink.
Answer the question.
Hey,
Dalinar, I don't have an answer.
Dalinar stabbed his drink that one time. Calm down.
With a bloody knife. He just cleaned it in the wine. It's okay.
Yeah,
Craig, what do you call it when you put a knife into something? It's stabbing.
Stab it. I guess you do stab it.
Yeah.
But doesn't it have to be solid for you to stab it?
Dalinar can stab anything he wants. He has giant biceps.
I mean, you can stab it. You just won't do any damage. That's what you learned from D&D.
Oh, like a gelatinous cube has slashing resistance. Or does it?
Well, today I learned Dalinar can stab anything.
I guess that would be the one thing.
Shallan draws Elokar what he could be, noble and regal. And, you know, it sort of brings him to tears.
So Shallan drawing is basically like burning gold.
Yeah, it is.
What's up with that?
Yeah, what is up with that?
So like, I was thinking about this week, and when you burn gold, it basically, like, it takes your identity and splits it into two parts. I mean, possibly more, but every time we've seen people burn gold, I think we've only seen two shadows. Like, when Vin did it, the captain boss did it.
It's just the one shadow. It's, like, real you, and then I think it, like, goes back to, like, your most important decision. What if you had gone a different way? Like,
yeah,
the most likely alternate decision at, like, the most important point.
However, Mike, when it's happening, you don't actually know which is the real you. They both feel like the real you when you burn gold itself.
Yeah.
So is there some kind of multiverse theory in the Cosmere fandom?
I mean, we already have three realms. We don't really need a multiverse.
Not the same thing as a multiverse.
No, but...
A multiverse is like split across time, whereas the in realmatic theory, the three realms all coexist at a single moment. So I almost, it's like, when you burn gold, I was thinking, like, okay, you have your identity. Gold lets you see your identity, but in multiple parts. Like, Vin has Urchin Vin and Debutante Vin, right? So, like, those are two parts of her personality that are kind of split from each other when she burns gold. Well, I guess you're saying, like, all right, she would be more street ratty if she made certain decisions, and she would be more debutante if she made other decisions. Actually, now it reminds me of Dune.
So if I may help, though, it's not really like Shallan's burning gold, because that would affect herself. Instead, it's Malatium. You remember the 11th metal? It's the 11th metal.
Okay, sure.
Because that sees other people's past selves at a critical moment and what they would be like in the present.
But it's not the 11th metal anymore.
Past,
okay, yes, Mike.
We have a new 11th metal.
Chromium. Nycrosil.
But yeah, it's Malatium. So
Atium is like the 17th metal now, right?
Man, I don't know.
I don't think it's spoilers for you to know this, Dave, but they recently came out with a word of Brandon where Atium itself is actually an alloy. So Malatium is like an alloy of an alloy. It's just because of how it works. And I think Brandon Sanderson realized he sort of screwed it up with how he made Atium. So he had to basically say Atium, I think, is a... correct me if I'm wrong, it's an alloy of Atium and either gold or Electrum?
Gold, I thought.
There you go.
Isn't Malatium gold and Atium?
Yeah.
So Malatium is gold and Atium and gold?
Yeah.
What's wrong? Is it because this is more of a pushy thing than a pulley thing, so it has to be...
I think it's more like, just like with originally having Wax be a savant, he realized that he needed certain things to have a lot more weight than he was giving them. So
yeah. There's also the issue where A-Team is a god metal, and technically all
Then when all the pits of Hassan, the A-Team coalesces, they don't forge it into... I don't get this.
I expect we're going to get like some proper explanations maybe in Era 3 or something.
Okay. Yeah, so, I guess he's working on the book, that's why.
There is a problem, because A-Team is a god metal, and technically all Allomancers should be able to burn god metals. So ATM, that's why he can't keep ATM as a singular god metal. It has to be an alloy. So it looks like, according to this post, it's from a YouTube stream.
So even like aluminum gnats should be able to burn pure ATM.
Yeah, anyone. Yeah, it's just like they can burn Laurasium. There just isn't enough for them to burn.
Even non-elementers can burn Laurasium. I'm willing to take that as a special case because it's the metal that provides the power of Allomancy.
True. But no, he thinks it should be a god metal, and it's weird that only a certain subset. And it looks like the word of Brandon is that ATM is an ATM Electrum alloy.
Okay, my bad.
So ATM is ATM and gold and whatever other metal Electrum is.
I silver.
Don't know. It's gold and silver.
Oh, it's gilded and silver. Okay. All right. Yep. So ATM is actually ATM plus gold plus silver. So male ATM is ATM plus gold plus silver plus gold.
Male ATM might be proper whatever the ATM god metal is and gold. It might just be that.
All right. So here's my question. When they mine ATM out of the pits of Hathsin, were there the Chondra go forge it into the alloy? Like, there's some practical issues here.
It might just be budding off of like gold and silver veins.
So maybe the hits. Okay, so the pits of Hathsin itself maybe has gold and silver in them,
right?
And then the ATM coalesces in rock buds that have gold and silver in them already.
If we wanted an explanation,
how smelting works.
Well, no.
Okay, hold on. I have something for this. You guys remember when Allomancer Yak licked a wall and got some tin?
He said he licked the wall and got some tin.
Yeah, it's like that.
If we're going to go with the easiest explanation that doesn't break the story, we have to go with something like that. Because unfortunately, Brandon would have to like do a major rewrite if he wanted to fix up how ATM is treated.
Oh, good. Then he can fix all the other nonsense in Well of Ascension.
And he did say he wants to change things up for the movie, if it ever gets made into a movie, where he can fix how ATM and stuff works. So
he could also put like women in the crew for that.
Yeah, Brandon.
What are we talking about? They've got Vin and Allery Ann and Tindwill.
That's crazy talk.
Doc Sandra.
You can retcon it so that Doc's. That was my best theory ever. This podcast will never get better than Well of Ascension. I'm sorry, future listeners and present listeners. But past listeners, you're good. You got it. What chapter are we on? Swift's
We have one more thing for 74 that you need to scroll down for.
Biaf.
Yeah, Craig. Biaf.
What is that? Bring your own feast? What does that mean? Bring your own food?
Bring your own fiddle. Turns out Shallan is actually a fiddler. It's never been mentioned before. It wasn't mentioned in this chapter, but Dave picked up on it because he is doing a very close reading. Good job, Dave.
Yep.
No, I actually have no idea what it's supposed to mean. Dave, what is that supposed to mean?
Bring your own food.
I was right. You didn't say anything.
She gets in, so the Cult of Moment sends her an invitation, like, come join us at the feast on the Oathgate platform. Bring your own food. And it's like, what is this, like a potluck? Or are they just trying to mooch off of her? And that's the end of chapter 74.
All right. 75?
Buddy. Yep. Only Red, but it's a flashback chapter, so why would Red be in it? 400 years ago, give or take. Okay. Okay, late night Dave. 2 a.m. finishing reading, Dave. Secret caravanners overtly wearing Sadius's colors. Landslide. Thrilly McGilly. Next scene. So Sadeist wasn't behind it after all, but he probably secretly was all along. That's the most Blackthorny thing I've ever heard in my life. Take it, Craig.
I actually understand most of these bullet points. So this is Dalinar catches up to the caravan. This is the past Dalinar, I should say.
From 400 years ago, give or take.
Yeah, from 400 years minus 390 or something like that. They are wearing Sadeus's uniforms, totally being secret about it, you know, as you do. And he gets all thrilly and does some damage to them, to all of them.
Well, first...
They don't survive.
Hold on. First, he's like, hey, there they are. They're wearing Sadeus's colors. That's weird that they would be wearing that out in the open when they're doing a secret mission. Hey, this looks kind of like a trap. Everybody pull back, and then the trap happens. So... he gets a mountain dumped on top of him and doesn't die. Just like Sadeus said would happen earlier in the book.
It is a pretty Sadeus-y scheme, if you ask me.
Anyway, keep going, Craig.
So the thrill, he embraces the thrill. He kills all the dudes. And then he realizes that it was a trap from the start. And basically they were just pulling down our way from the rift. So then he goes back. And he's angry. He's angry, and he wants to make the city burn. So they start making up some oil. It's time to go to town.
And that's pretty Blackthorny. But all right, so like this plan doesn't work unless they expect Dalinar to act completely out of character.
Go on.
Yeah. No, I know where Dave's going here. Like, in order for this trap to work, Dalinar had to personally go after the caravan, right?
And they could have tried to take some pot shots if he stayed.
Everyone should basically expect Dalinar to just go in and slaughter the rift, not parlay one-on-one, right?
Yeah. And for Dalinar to care about the caravan enough to personally go after it, he had to parlay and get fed that information by what's-his-face person. Yeah.
Kid man.
A thing that Dalinar doesn't do. He doesn't parlay. He doesn't talk. He goes in and he destroys. He says
that. For them to get the secret caravan, it might have been a trap for Sadeus, though. Like, it might not have been a trap.
People wearing his own uniform?
Right, it might not have been a trap for Dalinar. It might have been a trap for Sadeus, and just Dalinar happened to go, and they're like, wait, we could get rid of... Like, if your choice is to get rid of Dalinar or get rid of Sadeus, you're going to choose to try to get rid of Dalinar. So it's like, let's
Sadeus
see.
Is a jerkwad.
We don't know that yet.
Oh, this is the pasty chapter. All right, so...
I mean, they do kind of know that because Gavilar is a jerkwad who's conquering everybody and and sending Dalinar to kill people's dads. So, yeah.
So the simplest explanation, and I hate to say it, is that Evie is in on it because Evie's the one that convinced Dalinar to go parlay. And, like, I don't want Evie to be in on it. She's cool. I like her.
She had legit reasons for wanting that.
Yeah, and she's like, I mean, and like, Evie's been consistently anti-war and wanting Dalinar to be less violent. Like,
I mean, there's a chance that what Tanalan was saying was not all a lie. That there really is someone in his... So Tanalan was saying that Sadeus is the traitor.
Well, someone's definitely supplying them.
What if the traitor is actually in Dalinar's camp and is therefore able to feed information? Be like, hey, Dalinar's wife has been asking for parlay and stuff like that for peace. So maybe we can take advantage of that, you know?
Because nobody else was there for that conversation. It was just Dalinar and Evie. They were alone in the carriage.
They've had this talk multiple times before, or at least once before in a big way. So I could see that info getting out. But like, I just...
How often has Dalinar acted on it, though?
Well, he's felt bad about it before.
But how often has he, like, actually acted on it? I'm pretty sure this is, first time, it's one of the first.
What if Evie actually is in on it, and that's what prompts Dalinar to go to the Night Watcher to forget about her, because he wants to remember her in a fond way? But so he's like, he wants to forget about how she was traitorous. And then the Night Watcher curse was just to make him forget about Evie altogether.
Is this an official hashtag Dave theory? You need to type it up and put it in the channel?
I don't need to do anything, but I might. I don't want. It's like I don't want to write it down because I don't want it to be true.
Oh, I share my theories because I want them to be true so I can take credit for them when later they end up being true.
But Evie's great.
All right, so Dave, be an adult and break down exactly how this worked. You're saying Evie is the mastermind behind all of it.
Not the mastermind, but implicated somehow. I mean, this is one possibility. The other possibility is just that it's all Sadeus is doing, which is pretty likely as well. I mean, Sadeus has Dalinar's ear and probably has, heard about his troubles with his wife and heard about, you know, Dalinar maybe considering that he would possibly one day parlay. Sadeus also, you know, he's really insightful. So, like, he's got this kind of, it's kind of like the, it's hiding in plain sight kind of deal. It's like, he won't think that it's really my men if we're so obviously wearing Sadeus colors, green and white. Like, so it's like, it's the perfect decoy. It's no decoy at all, right? And why would Sadeus want Dalinar dead?
Yeah. Why would he ever want that?
At this point, I don't know. I mean, later on, when Dalinar starts suing for peace, like, it makes sense that he doesn't, his goals don't align with Sadeus. So, like, later on at the tower, when Sadeus betrays him, that's a different Dalinar than Sadeus is, you know, purportedly trying to kill at this point. So, I don't know. Why would he want to kill Dalinar at this point?
If you think Sadeus is behind it, it could be that
he's Sadeus wants the crown either. Like, Sadeus wants power and he wants what he thinks is best for Alethkar. But I don't see Sadeus as a usurper. That doesn't really seem like his MO.
So, no, not for usurping, but he could see Dalinar as a threat to Gavilar. I mean, that's essentially Dalinar. Dalinar has had the same thought. So this could just be Sadeus working with Gavilar to keep Dalinar occupied and maybe just
who read the book Feeding Me False Theories, the podcast.
I don't think Sadeus is behind us, for the record.
That's a good theory, Craig. What if Dalinar usurped Gavilar? Yeah, he should kill his brother.
I'll probably just wait for his son and then usurp the throne from his son, honestly.
All right, I think we're ready for spoiler time. Is anybody not ready for spoiler time?
Bye, Dave.
All right.
Bye, Dave.
Merry Christmas. Bye, all.
All right, Dave's muted. Play the thing.
This concludes the spoiler-free section of our podcast. If you are, as I am, reading along for the first time, we recommend that you stop listening now, as the following will contain spoilers for not only this book, but for other Cosmere books as well. There may also be general spoilers from any other source material. Spoilers begin now.
What if this is Gavilar by way of Sadeus trying to kill off Dalinar?
You mean the thing I said?
Yeah, but like with the information that we have of how much of a jerk Gavilar is?
I don't think Sadeus or Gavilar were behind this. I think Tanalan was trying something. I do think maybe they were surprised that Dalinar was parlaying. Maybe it was going to be a ploy for Sadeus just to keep him occupied. Like, hey, someone's wearing my colors. I'll go send some scouts. Because Sadeus isn't going to go by himself. He doesn't do that. He will send people to go investigate. So, I don't know.
Like,
You're right. Dalinar has to act out of character for this particular ploy to work. And it did.
I will give you that it's much less likely that he's telling the truth once, you know, Dalinar comes back and as soon as he left, the troops in the city, like, killed his people that they let in. That undermines a lot of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm still, there's so many people that could be behind this that aren't Tanalan, like Marg. I still need an adult. So Dave hasn't picked up that Azure is not a local yet, or at least he didn't mention it.
No, but I don't think I quite realized it this early yet. We need to hear Azure actually talk more. Because there's something that just suddenly clicks and clues me into.
She hasn't got a lot of screen time at this
point. She has sworn badly.
I missed it. What did she say?
Like, damnation you or something like that. Like, it was really clunky.
Right, right.
Like, it was an autocorrect.
Huh. Like, I missed that one. Dang it.
the full damnation instead of a much more feasible, like, storm you or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. And plus she does have the weird quote-unquote shard blade, which he did put in his bullet points, but notice we didn't talk about it at all. I didn't point it out. I was waiting for him to bring it up, but he didn't want to say anything about it.
I mean, it is a shard blade. It's an artificial shard blade.
Yeah.
She made a robot's friend with presumably less of a personality or possibly no personality than Nightblood. I'd like to get more screen time with her sword, like, outside of this book. I want to know what's up with that. Like, did she just refine... it wasn't even Vasher that made it. Who was it that made Nightblood?
Shashara.
Shashara. Yeah, did she just, like, refine Shashara's methods to not create this horrifying...
I suspect soul-eating blade. That Vasher and Vivenna actually worked together to make the new Nightblood 2.0 to avoid the mistakes that were made the first time around. And maybe that, or maybe there was a discussion about it, and that is what made them, like, part ways. We need Nightblood. We need the book Nightblood, because I believe that's where we'll see this sword come in creation.
Or we need Azure to come back in Stormlight 5. That'd be pretty cool.
I don't know if she'll talk about the blade, though.
I don't know. She might. Maybe we'll get, like, a cool scene or several scenes with her and Zeth. You know, maybe they go off to go visit Shinovar. They have their little road trip.
I'm curious if her shardblade has the capabilities that Nightblood has in basically being able to destroy Shardhold. Like, the legit big Shardhold.
I would suspect not, because she's actually drawing and using it in this book. So, like, drawing Nightblood is a big deal. Capital B, yeah. Capital D, big deal.
Right.
I think, like, Zeth does it twice in this book, and the first time it nearly kills him because he wasn't ready for it, if I'm remembering correctly.
So I did have some bullet points.
Oh, one more thing. Has everyone that Shallan has, like, identity barded with a drawing, have they all died?
I think.
Wait, did the sailor dude, did he die? Because he pops up again later.
Well, she didn't identity him. She just drew a picture of him. I'm talking about specifically, like, drawing a not currently accurate version that makes them look better than they are, like she did with what's-his-face, whose hat she took. The slaver guy's, one of his guards, whose name is just gone. It's just gone.
I thought she drew a good picture of the sailor dude who's still alive.
Yes, but not in a way that makes him better than he was. I'm talking about a specific thing, like she does for Elikar.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I'm just not sure if we should make a distinction between what she does and identity party. Like, I feel like it's just the same thing.
Well, until she really embraces her Knight Radianting in book two, she's not trying to make people better. She's trying to get, like, accurate. And the people that she makes better, I think they all die. I think Shallan's right. Killing these people.
She's death noting them?
I mean, maybe.
It'd be.
We don't have any proof otherwise. All right, you have bullet points.
I do have bullet points. So first was about Azure's shard blade, that it wasn't a Lethe design, which is important, I think. Was it the aforementioned shard blade? It did have an otherworldly look about it. And why wear it instead of dismissing it? So we know it can't be dismissed, that it looks otherworldly. So at that point, with that sentence, Dave should have been like, is this an honor blade? Or is this like Nightblood?
Well, he did guess that it was an honor blade.
Oh, did he? I might have missed that.
Yeah, he guessed that was the source of the food, was that...
Okay.
Or not necessarily that it was an honor blade, but, like, that she was Knight Radianting, but it's not a huge leap to go, well, that weird sword, what if honor blade?
Yeah.
Sorry, I misrepresented what Dave said there. Dave did not guess honor blade. Sorry, want to make that clear.
Yeah, it definitely should be setting off some alarms in your head, but it's understandable to not make the connection just yet. I don't know. I think there's something about her hair or something. I want to say there's some scene about she mentions her hair or talking about her hair that, like, that's when I realize, oh, crap, this is Vivenna. As soon as it pops up, I will tell you guys, but we haven't reached it yet.
Yeah, I don't remember any mention specifically of her hair.
I could be wrong. It's been a while, but... I just remember at some point it clicked for me, which is so cool, like figuring out before. And I remember reading Reddit and people were figuring out after the fact, or they were mentioning like, whoa, I missed it. I'm like, man, I caught it. Yeah. It just feels nice to actually catch that sort of reference sometimes.
Yeah, it's really nice to catch it in the book like you and I both did. Tori, did you also get Vivenna your first time through?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Especially after feeling like a moron for not catching Vasher.
I feel like Zahiel is harder to catch. In retrospect, it's obvious. But like while reading through it, it's hard to like, especially like, because the times you actually see him, you don't even know Nightblood is there yet. The moment Nightblood pops up, you should start looking around for others. Like, where the heck is Vasher? And maybe where's Vivenna? Because they went off together at the end of Warbreaker. That should be your thought when Nightblood pops up.
Instead it was, huh, that Ardent's kind of weird. Oh, well, more Adolin, please.
Yep, I hear that. All right, next one is later on in the chapter when he's looking out over the wall. And he talks about the singers that he met that he was sort of a part of. The quote itself isn't important, but he is thinking fondly about the people he was sort of bonding. And this is sort of like a general bullet point to talk about Kaladin and how he bonds with these groups of people. We have Bridge 4, but he also starts bonding with the singers and they feel like they are part of his squad, not his squires, but he does form a connection with them. I should say it is a capital C connection. And same thing is happening with the Wall Guard. He's forming a connection with Lieutenant Noro and his other squad mates. Like, this is just what he does. And we're going to see the effect of this later when the singers and the Wall Guard actually clash together and start killing each other, because it's going to wreck him. But
yeah, he hasn't figured out how to us versus them correctly. I think what he eventually ends up with is like, if they are a capable opponent actively trying to kill me or the people on my side, then they're fair game. Otherwise, I gotta protect.
Yeah, I'm not convinced we need an us versus them though. I think Kaladin has it right. Like, the problem with the singers that they're having is that they were mistreated. They had their identity and connection ripped from them. And then the people of Roshar were like, oh, cool, free slaves. Like, that's horrible. Well, like, they're totally in the wrong. And
I don't think we ever see Kaladin actually fight singers from this point forward. He only fights the fused. Like, specifically the...
Right, right.
Mostly the Windrunner fused, which, you know, there's no permadeath there, so...
And they actively duel. Like, you can, like, nod to them, and they will one-on-one duel, because they are a bit honorable.
Yeah. So, like, that's I think, his line is, like, capable opponents, i.e. the Fused,
yep,
who are actively trying to hurt people on my side.
Yep.
And, like, I don't, like, please correct me if I'm wrong here, I don't remember him ever, like, him or any of the other Windrunners actually, like, fighting against any of the just the regular singers.
I don't think they do, but I have to do a reread of Rhythm of War.
Yeah, same. I probably won't until we get there, but I should.
I was gonna get into it after this book, just because I need a refresher. But yeah, so yeah, he does form a connection, and it's very quick how he can form a connection with, and it's just sort of something that he does. Maybe it's a Windrunner thing, or maybe this is a Kaladin thing. It feels like it's just a Kaladin thing that he forms a close bond with the people he works together with.
Yep. And anybody that he basically sees as a person weaker than himself is like that triggers his protection oaths.
Right.
Which at this point is almost everyone.
Well, yeah. All right. I'm going to jump ahead. Chapter 71, the flashback chapter. Evie says, sometimes you get this look in your eyes, a horrible, terrifying nothingness, like you have become a creature with no heart, feasting upon souls to fill that void, dragging Painspren in your wake. That is the thrill.
Yep, that's Dalinar stops being Dalinar, starts being Thrillinar. I don't know if that's a thing in the community, but if not, I'm taking it. I'm using it.
But even specifically, I wanted to point out, like you have become a creature with no heart, feasting upon souls to fill the void. That is what the thrill does. Like, we were sort of like, what's the point of the thrill? What is it does? What does it do that it boosts these certain violent emotions? And it's because this is how it feeds. Like, I think legit Evie can actually see what this unmade is doing.
Right, because she's the only one who knows Dalinar well enough, and also isn't tied in with the Alethi war machine, where, like, becoming a bloodthirsty crush all before me and hear the lamentations of their women is a good thing, right?
Yeah, and this is just a continuation of that.
Yeah, so, like, anybody else seeing Dalinar going, you know, full berserker mode, it's like, yeah, go Dalinar! But yeah, she sees that there's actually something wrong with that.
Yeah, I think it's very easy for the Alethi to ignore that because they thought it's their companion. Which goes into my next bullet point, where he says what he views that bloodlust as, a companion. Many of his officers felt the same. It was natural. You went to war, and the thrill was your reward. And this is, of course, us seeing the connection, capital C connection, that he starts forming with the thrill, which he'll be able to utilize at the end of the book to very great effect.
Yep.
I cannot wait. Guys, I sort of can't wait to the end of this book. There's so many good scenes at the end of this book.
All right, Craig, what's the most important step a man can take?
The next one.
Heck yeah, it is. Tori, you lit up for a second. What's up?
Oh, I was going to say that the end of the book, the battle at Phelan Fields with everybody going off and doing their own. It's like that battle at the end of Avengers where, you know, Captain America's like, okay, you do this and you do that and Hulk, smash. There's a lot of that in there.
All right. Next bullet point is the Shallan chapter where she has taken the identity of the Lady of the House. It's like Nana Nev. Two nanas.
You know, Nananev.
And she's thinking like her, and the quote is, well, she's just an inferior version. She's thinking about the other lady of the house who she's mimicking. She's just an inferior version, obviously. Just deal with her, take her place. It would feel right, wouldn't it? So this is a glimpse of her, like, completely taking the identity of Nananev. Nananev. Why do I have problems with simple names?
She could talented Mr. Ripley at any moment.
Yeah. So I just wanted to highlight that because, like, her personas, Vale and Radiant, like, they really are, like, a complete rewrite identity sort of thing happening. Basically, the soul stamps that we get from Emperor's Soul, except Shallan does it with her light weaving.
I still love that Adolin can tell and, like, insists that he is not married to Vale or Radiant. He's married to Shallan.
That's true. And I think that says more about Adolin than anything. The fact that he gets like a little chunk, a little piece. And maybe it's the connection that he has with her. That he can sense Shallan, but not when her identity changes because the connection is just off. Or maybe I'm just reading too much into it, which I do. And I think the next bullet point, I'm not going to read it. It's just the hello, fellow Light Eyes. It's when he's thinking like, I'm a Light Eyes and you guys are Light Eyes, and I'm totally thinking Light Eye thoughts. Like, it's just silly.
Oh, yeah, during that. So, like, the rest of the crew, of the wall guard, is, like, they see Adolin from across the street, and they're just trashing on him. And Kaladin's all like, why don't we try to recruit him? I bet he's a pretty cool guy.
Well, that's my next bullet point, actually.
Oh, sorry. I'll quote it
for you. No, it's okay. At the same time, they were mocking Adolin Colin, who had a shot at the title of best swordsman in all of Alethkar. Yes, his suit was a little bright, but if they would merely spend 5 minutes talking to him, they'd see he wasn't so bad. Like, it's the whole scene.
And this is from Kaladin hates the Light Eyes. What's his last name?
For
Stormblessed.
Sure.
Whatever.
Oh, Dreamy Kaladin. Yeah.
Yeah. Dreamy Kaladin Stormblessed, who, previous to, you know, actually making friends with Adolin, was absolutely willing to just completely demolish the entire system of Light Eyes and Dark Eyes, kill all the Light Eyes, take over. Yeah, there weren't any good ones, because the one that he thought was a good one was a bad one.
He's starting to collect ones that he likes. I wanted to highlight that passage I read, because best broship? What's the term? Adolin and Kaladin are complete bros.
Bromance?
Bromance, that's the word, yeah.
Yeah, this is Shallan and her boyfriend Adolin, and Adolin's boyfriend Kaladin, and Kaladin's girlfriend Vale.
But I think the first time Kaladin actually meets Adolin, he had the same exact thoughts that the Wall Guard have in this chapter. Like, he's just some prissy Oh, it was eyes.
It was much worse because Adolin was like, hey, Bridge Boy, tossed him a gem. And he's like, send a message to Sadeas that I can't meet today. And Caladon's all like, thank you for the money. I will not do that.
Yeah, yeah. But you can see how well he thinks of him. And I think later on he even talks about how Adolin was the only one who also threw himself in jail because he believed Caladon wholeheartedly. And like, that like is instant best friend status, like right there. Like the fact that Adolin did that for Caladon, it's like, yes, I now completely trust you.
I mean, I've mentioned this before, but like, that's Kaladin's line is, believes me about Amaram. That's his line. If you believe Caladon about Amaram, you are best bros for life. If you don't, then you're just not ever at that level.
Yeah. And Downar gets there. It takes a little bit, but Downar gets there. Adolin was there from the beginning. Good job.
And Shallan still hasn't said anything to bring her over the line, over that line with Caladon, even though she is absolutely on board with F. Amaram.
Oh, yeah.
Reddit/F. Amaram.
Well, so she gets a pass. She gets a, okay, we hate Amaram, so you're okay, but...
But she doesn't ever...
He needs to hear the words. She needs the words.
Because she doesn't ever tell him that. Like, she is there, he is there, they don't communicate it. It's a Jane Austen novel, but with murdering a dude. Tori?
Yes, absolutely. I agree.
And that's all I had. We talked about the chapter 75 thing, and I don't have any notes for chapter 74.
I thought I had something, and it's gone now. Dang it. Alright, well, whatever. You guys want to end the episode?
Yes, I have to put a baby to bed.
Okay, you go put a baby to bed. Alright, bye everybody.
Good night, Internet.
Bye.
This has been the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @CosmereCast, or like us on Facebook. Our theme music is Traveling Made Up Continents by Gillicuddy, used with permission. Hear more from him at the Free Music Archive. Thanks for listening.